Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Conan.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, traders and investors. Welcome to this Friday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep, brought to you by Thinkorswim and TD Ameritrade. I'm Spencer Israel here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick. We also have a special guest in the crowd today. We'll get to that later, though. First, we got to talk about the earnings we got today. Disney, JWN, Michael Kors, NVIDIA. It's also Singles Day, so Alibaba's doing great in China. There's been talk about this big rally. Also, a really crazy rumor from Fitbit yesterday. We'll get to all of that. But we also have two guests to get to, so it'll be a jam-packed day. We're at 8:15. We're chatting with Lloyd Perlmutter. He's a retail industry executive and advisor. We're also talking with Andrew Zatlin at 8:35. He's the editor of Moneyball Economics and the Vice Index. Joel, how are we doing in the S&Ps on this beautiful Detroit Friday morning?
Oh, only down 7 points here. I'm sure we'll be green in any moment here. High in the S&Ps, 21.70.50, but I'm looking at the close. 66.75 is a relevant level. 51 and a quarter, that is your pre-market low. Not a good number until 47.75. That was a low from yesterday. So maybe an inside day today. Crude just can't hold any of these rallies here. 43.88 is the low now in that panic trading on Tuesday night. I'll show you the daily chart here. Crude got into the lower 43s here, 43.07, I believe. So we'll keep an eye on that level. Gold and silver just can't rally here. Not enough fear in the market. 1250.40, I believe Ed Parker had that as a target. So hopefully got out of his gold short there. But 803, Dennis, how you doing? How you surviving these markets?
I'm trying to survive here, and I'll tell you, it's been difficult for a trader like me. And, you know, my background, you know, I like the charts. I use charts, but mostly I do statistical arbitrage. And I will tell you, if you've been doing stat arb here in the last 2 days, you are getting run over. I have backed off on a lot of different stat arb strategies because I realize they're not working right now in this Trump market. Some stocks go one direction, some stocks go the other. You know, I do a lot of mean reversion as well. That is not working here either because these trends are very, very pesky. Even like I was saying yesterday, you know, I was starting a, you know, a short position in Bank of America. That was not good. Bank of America goes all the way up to $19, blowing it out. You know, so you think 1850 is going to hold. You try to find levels. You think, how much further can these things go? Well, they can go a long ways because this Bank of America has went from $16 to $19 in three trading sessions. Absolutely incredible here. I want to bring you up with the chart of RGR. I didn't trade this one, but I was just scanning through charts last night looking for moves, you know, that, you know, show how bad it's been for the mean reversion traders. Bring up the intraday chart from RGR here, Joel, because it is absolutely incredible here. I mean, the two-day chart, two days, right before Trump got in, the stock closes 64.70, a stock that you might think might benefit because it's a gun maker. But, you know, if you stop and think about it, well, nobody else is going to be worried about their guns going away, so they might not be going out and buying guns. So maybe fundamentally it makes sense, but holy cow, 2 days goes from $64 down to $48. I mean, these moves are incredible. And if you look at that move from the start of yesterday, open yesterday at 55.85, open at the high, within a half an hour, the stock lost 15%. And I mean, look at that move pointed out on the chart. It is straight down that move. Incredible.
What Dennis is talking about here, as market makers, you have an affirmative obligation to make a two-sided market, even if it's 100 shares. If you're, you know, have a bid and offer here and you just keep getting hit on 100, on 100, on 100, on 100, on a, you know, all of a sudden you've developed a large position and there's no bounce. There's no bounce
to get out of.
No bounce to even scratch it. Jimmy A has halted his main strategy for now, and I think this is one thing we try and emphasize, you know, on the show, trading and investing, which are two different things, but altering your strategies is the most important thing. Full disclosure, Dennis, I just want to ask you, did you get covered on the open in Bank America?
I actually had a hedged up, so I didn't get hurt too bad. But you know what I did do? So after everything's said and done, and, you know, some of these moves, you know, I realize I'm on the wrong side of the trade because I start losing money. I cover quickly. You know what I did, you know, wrong, and this is why I got beat up yesterday, was more than anything. I got out, and I got flat out of everything at about 9:45. So I was sitting pretty. I was like, okay, you know, I was wrong a lot of things, but I'm not down money today, which is incredible when you're wrong, you know, on a lot of your calls. Like when, you know, when you're making calls, you think Bank of America's going down, it goes straight up. So I was doing pretty good. I forgot some orders out there though. I turned away from my screen for like a minute and I look back at my screen and I'm down a point in Prudential and I'm like, I didn't even know I had an order out there to short Prudential. I look at Prudential and look at the move, look at the opening move. So I got short around 95. That thing is at 96 and 97, 2 minutes later. I'm like, are you kidding me right now? You know, here you're looking at, I'm down 2 points in this. I've been in the trade 2 minutes. I didn't even know I had it. So, and then I had another one out there too. It was Foot Locker, actually, different sector. But I got short Foot Locker, had it paired up with Nike. Again, statistical arbitrage not working at all right now. And Foot Locker, I look at, I'm down a point in Foot Locker. I just looked away from my screen for a minute. I didn't even know those orders were out there. So, one thing, you know, when you look away, from, make sure you don't have your orders sitting out there and you forget about them for 2 minutes. Because you get up to go to the bathroom, you come back, and you're like, what? What just happened here? So, you know, stuff happened. I deserve those. You know, when you forget orders out there, you deserve to lose that money. You know, you're not managing it right. You look away from your screen. You take off to go to the bathroom, come back, and you're down. But unbelievable that you can be down 2 points in Prudential. This is a stock that usually moves a buck or two a day. I'm down 2 points in 2 minutes in it. It was incredible. So, you know, that's where I got hurt pretty good. And then last night I tried to be a hero here too because I actually traded through the day. I got all my money back. I was actually flat again at 4 o'clock. So I was like, okay. A lot of hard work here today, but I actually got back to scratch again. And you know what I do? I'm trading NVIDIA. And I'm like, I'm going to be a hero here. And I have this in my head. While tech stocks have been getting hit pretty hard here, here's a huge bounce in NVIDIA off of the earnings. I'm like, okay, it was a good earnings report, but I think the old high is going to hold. And I start shorting it at the old high at 72.90. Boom, 73.5, 74, 75. Like in 2 minutes, I'm like, oh, come on. It comes back in a little bit. I cover half the position. That was good because it went 76, 77, 78 last night. So I got hit hard in NVIDIA too. So it was a rough day for trading. But you know what? As traders, you're going to have rough days. And it's all about, you know, it's all about how you deal with those emotions, trying not to let it affect you the next day. But in this market, if your strategies aren't working, and some strategies don't always work, there's different markets, different strategies. Mean reversion works 95% of the time. Right now, I will tell you it is not working. And if you are a mean reversion trader, you need to scale down right now until it stops or starts working again. Mean reversion has a history. It will work again here. But if you're trying to do mean reversion on a stock like RGR and it falls 7 points in 15% in 20 minutes, it's, you know, you're just underwater. You're in big trouble.
Couple questions here. Is this fundamentals or algo trading? I think you did a pretty good explanation. This is just market makers and mean reversion traders just getting lit up like a Christmas tree.
Oh, yeah.
I think.
Oh, yeah.
Also, do you think tech will bounce back soon? I don't know. And then Andrew Zatlin, who's going to be a guest on the show here at 8:35, you know, FANG got nailed because there's money rotation and people are having to get out of these stocks and they're switching money around. And also when you have the have the kind of rally, if you're holding a Facebook or something like this, you're like, well, this is a big component of the S&P. This should be rallying. I'm going to buy a little bit more. And then all of a sudden, boom, stops are getting hit and you're looking out the window. Real quickly, Dennis, on this Bank America, I can't resist shorting this thing. I full the
19 is huge.
Yeah.
But again, Joel, if it starts taking out 19, they seem to be going to the next whole number. Like, look at the action. You know, it pauses at 17 2 days ago. Then it runs to 18, struggles at 18. Takes out 18, it's 19. If it takes out 19, it could be 20. So you got to be very careful, you know, if you're shorting off of the 19. It looks great. It looks like a great number. If I go to the book right now, I guarantee you there's going to be some big size or I haven't even looked, but I'd imagine I'm trying to bring up the book right now, but my computer seems to not be responding. So wake up, computer.
All right, 19.
There's size. There's
I gave
size.
Myself another week, so I didn't, you know, I got a whole week.
But you're fighting the tape there too. I mean, you're contrarian trading there, and contrarian trading is not working right now.
We'll
so you got to be careful too. Like, I mean, that I agree with you. I mean, it's a ridiculous move. It seems too much too fast. But everybody else is saying the same thing. So it's crowded right now. It's crowded to everybody wanting to short this stock. And that's why it keeps going higher. When everybody's on the same side of the trade, it's going to go the opposite
way.
It's all about short-term order flow.
All right,
and when all the short-term order flow is on one side of the trade, it's going to go the other way.
All right, let's cover some stocks here. We only got
but
four.
Now, I want to keep on this because, you know, we cover earnings. We cover things a lot of times, but this is lessons. This is stuff you can take to the bank. You can use this stuff every day. You know, look at the move in Facebook. I just want to reiterate how bad it's been for mean reversion traders. FB opens a day at 123 yesterday, or 123.5. And, you know, you can see the high right up there near 124. Look at the opening bar. Look at how it moves in 15 minutes. Facebook loses 9 straight points. That's 9 points for Facebook, a stock that typically moves a buck or two. 9 straight points down in 15 minutes. If you're a stat arb trader, you are banging your head against the wall because the S&P futures are rallying, and you're looking, how is Facebook falling 9 straight points? Well, you know why? Because you've got another stock on the opposite side, like a Bank of America or like some of these financials, that's going straight up and making up for the losses in the Facebook. So if you're just playing pure statistical arbitrage and saying, well, these things got to revert back, they don't have to do it. And, you know, sometimes they do, and sometimes they do come back, and maybe they'll come back, but probably after you blew out. So it's very difficult to be fighting these trends right now here because they're very pesky, and there's a lot of people that want to be calling the bottom in Facebook. They're buying at 120, then they're buying at 119, then they're buying at 118, then they're 117, then they're throwing up at 116 and selling it down at 115.5. Crazy moves.
All right, that's, you know, keep an eye on your charts. And, you know, if something's not working, and we always talk about adding to losing positions, just try and cut bait. Also, you know, look at some new strategies, big moves and everything. Eventually things are going to calm down, but for right now.
One more. Got to show you one okay. more. Because we got 2 minutes for our guest, so we might as well just keep going with this. Procter & Gamble. Here is a stock, a conservative issue that typically moves a buck a day. Look at where it opens. Opens yesterday just under 86 bucks. Within 20 minutes, it is trading in the 82 handle. Goes through 85, straight through 84, straight through 83. There's no bounce. If you were playing, you know, okay, it's going to bounce here at 85, you have no out. You know, you've got to be hitting it down at 84.5 or even 84 to get out of that. It was falling so quickly. Just absolutely straight down. If you're playing a market-making role, if you're playing, you know, mean reversion, you are murdered in that move. So, you know, there's been some traders, and somebody, you know, tweeted out last night, and it just shows, you know, that they, you know, and there's a lot of people on Twitter that, you know, aren't active traders, and they don't really know what they're talking about. But so, yeah, if you're on the right side of the move, but if you're on the wrong side of the move, it's the worst trading market ever. So there's no in-between here. It's good or it's bad, depending on if you're the right side of the move or not, because these moves are pesky. Traders, you know, market-making, stat-arb guys like us at Bray Trading, we make more money in shop, you know, where it's moving up, it's moving down, it's moving up, moving down. When it's straight down on the move like that, it's tough as a trader to make money, I'll tell you that.
Esteban had some puts in Netflix that were up 1,000%. Congratulations.
He's on the right side of the trade. And look, Netflix, same thing. 123 to 113, straight down. These are, you know, these are insane moves. Moves that just don't typically happen where a stock loses like Netflix 10 points in the first 20 minutes of the day, straight down with no hope. If you're on the right side of the trade, you are loving this market. If you are on the wrong side of the trade, you are hating this market. And if you're on the wrong side of the trade, you better identify it early or it's going to be a really ugly day for you.
Yeah, that Nick, I know Nick after earnings put up some a credit put spread on. We'll have to get an update on him on Tuesday. I took a little, probably took a little heat. Now you got a big gap there to fill in Netflix as well. All right, Dennis, let's cover one earnings stock here, and then we'll bring in our first guest. And I guess the big one's
House of Mouse.
House of Mouse. Unbelievable move here in Disney.
Because last night they got hit hard. And Spencer, give us the details real quick.
Q4 EPS $1.10 versus $1.16 revenue, $13.14 billion versus $13.52 billion. Here we get some breakdown numbers. Parks and resorts fell 5%. This is operating income I'm talking about. Parks and resorts fell 5% year over year. Studio entertainment fell 28% year over year. Consumer products and interactive media fell 5% year over year.
Report, when you take it at face value, does not look good at all. Nothing looks good there. It missed on the top. They missed on the bottom. They're talking about revenue declines there in multiple sectors of their business. ESPN numbers, I guess, were no good there either. And the stock got hit originally. It went all the way down to $90.61. But then this crazy market, funny things, pesky trends. I don't know what they said on the conference call, but I don't even know if it just the market decides to go the other way. And Disney blasts into orbit around 5:30, about an hour after the report. It just blasts off and takes off to $98. $96, and now it's trading up at $96.90. So here you are. If you are like, even if you had, let's just say hypothetically you were an insider and you had this earnings report, imagine how bad you are. Like, you know, here you had the report ahead of time. If you were an insider, and this does happen, there's insiders out there that get the reports, you know, they should be in jail, but it does happen. Those insiders are getting murdered in the stock right now because this looks like a terrible report, and they're looking at this saying, how in the hell is this thing up 2 points on this report? But funny things happen in this market.
Keep an eye on that pre-market high as we is 98.47. There was, this is an unconfirmed rumor on the conference call that they said that pre-market prep was going to be coming to their house of channels, and that was that, that was a rumor. All right, Dennis, we're a minute late here. We're going to do a quick interview with Lloyd Perlmutter. We're going to talk retail. We'll be right back.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, Forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.
Welcome back, traders and investors, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep, brought to you by Benzinga Pro. I'm your co-host, Joel Elkan, along with Dennis Dick and Spencer Israel, and we have Lloyd Perlmutter on the line. He's a retail industry executive and advisor. Lloyd, how you doing on this Friday morning?
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Great to be on.
All right. So here's a man with 30 years of experience in retail, working at different places at the Gap for 8 years. Just if you could summarize the changes that you've seen over the last 30 years and what the implications are for the future of retail.
And how much time do we have? No, seriously, I think, the pace of change is accelerating, and as it is in most businesses, but especially in this business, especially at the onset of the online channel. I think that that's disrupted the entire retail space and, made retailers think about their consumers and the behaviors differently than they ever have. And to be honest with you, you know, retailers are good at that. Why? Because they have to be responsive to the consumer. And consumers who behave like all of us do as human beings are, you know, fickle. They change their minds. They change their tastes. Styles change. And so they've had to be, the really good ones, the ones who have had staying power, have had to stay on top of that desire and actually anticipate the consumer's needs just ahead of when the actual consumer wants them. So those who have done it have been able to adjust to this sea change in approach and added the channels that are necessary. And actually, over the last couple of years, the big issue these days is this whole notion of what they were calling omni-channel retailing, but now I refer to it, and a lot of people refer to it as boundaryless retailing, which is really the key to success today. And what does that mean? What you have to do is provide a seamless consumer experience regardless of where the consumer wants to interact with you. So it could be in a store, which is now quote-unquote old-fashioned. It could be online. But it could be a combination of the two. They want to order it online, pick it up in the store. They want to order it a mobile way. They want to have it shipped certain ways in different directions. And so you have to be responsive and have to be able to match the consumer's expectations now that online has certainly increased those expectations.
Lloyd, speaking of old-fashioned, I want to ask you about JCPenney. They reported earnings this morning, Q3 adjusted EPS, 21-cent loss. Sales 2.86 versus $2.96 billion. Comps were down 0.8%. What do you see out of this store, out of this brand?
Well, there's no question it's been a rocky road for JCPenney over the last few years. You know, my friend Gron Johnson went in there and tried to change probably too much too quickly, and he would admit that, and just didn't work with that old and relatively tired brand. They abandoned their base, which was, you know, families and moms and sort of middle America, And now they're trying to move a little slower. They're back appealing to their base, which are middle-income moms, as I mentioned, and they sort of stabilize things. But it's just a rocky road out there. It's a very difficult, choppy situation. And a lot of the issues are those that are, especially in the malls, because the JCPenney's tied to the malls. And so that traffic has been up and down and sideways for a little bit of time now. So I think that that's part of the issue. On the plus side, though, I think that their relatively new CEO, Marvin Ellison, has done some good things. They continue to take Sears market share because Sears is still a disaster. They've actually now just moved in appliances because they found that was going to be a big opportunity to take market share from Sears. They're moving more to private labels. They've got Sephora opening more stores. So, I think that they're on a good path, relatively speaking, but it's just very difficult out there. And they're doing some of the blocking and tackling, which a friend of mine and I talked about last night in terms of what's necessary at retail, even in this sea change that we're undergoing. So, I think we're going to see a little bit of choppy waters over the next little while, but I think that they're emphasizing the right things and they're making the online investments as well. And so, I think that they will stabilize and I think that they'll have some incremental opportunities in the near future.
All right. We're looking not too bad in the long term at JCPenney. What about Nordstrom? They also reported earnings yesterday after the bell. Q3 EPS, 84 cents versus 51 cents. Looking good there. Revenue, $3.5 billion versus $3.48 billion. They said comps increased. They also increased their guidance. So a strong report from Nordstrom from the Q3. What are you seeing out of them?
Nordstrom, I think they're the best of all the higher-end department stores, the best run. And why is that? Because they've got a lot of stability in leadership. Family's been running that business, for approximately 115 years. So I think it's not easy at the higher end, especially for department stores, but they've got a lot of things on the go. They've made a lot of great decisions. So their customer service has always been a hallmark of theirs. And that's actually deeply entrenched in the culture of the organization. And I think customers understand that. So I think that they're going to be obviously a first choice for customers, regardless of where they are. Again, they've made investments online. They've got, a robust off-price business. They've done they've made some smart decisions now to go into Canada, which is now having rave reviews versus Target's disaster in Canada over the past little while. And they only have 5 designated sales events per year, which means that their margins can remain healthy, which I think is driving some of their results. So, if there were one higher-end department store that I liked the best from an operational standpoint, it would be Nordstrom because of their stability and the way they approach their business for the long term.
What about Kohl's? Kohl's reported last week there, and this is a store that I shop at, and they had a pretty good report as well. So what do you see from KSS?
What's interesting about Kohl's is there's a similarity here to the theme, and there's stability in the executive suite. And I think that that's an important aspect when you're looking at some of these companies and how they operate. Kevin Mansell has been with the company since 1982. He assumed the mantle from Larry Montgomery, who had been there since 1988. And Larry's still there as chairman. So, I think that there's a lot of solid decision-making, long-term decision-making that is incumbent in bred in Kohl's. And there's no question, still a choppy ride. It's a blend of a department store and discount chain. The thing is that they're not tied to mall traffic, per se, because they create their own traffic, because they're usually on pads, either in the mall parking lot or away from the malls. And so that's part of their long-term strategy from a real estate standpoint. They also made a strategic bet on sort of wear now merchandise as opposed to putting in too much cold weather merchandise for the third quarter, which helped pay off, it's paid off in terms of, their inventory turns were improved and they had higher sell-throughs, which led to higher margins. They're going to start to sell Apple products now. Their private labels are now up to 50% of their business. So I think that there's a lot of good things that are going to come down the road from Kohl's. I think they made some good decisions. They had some rough times and they've had some choppy waters. But I think also their home office being in the heartland, in Menominee Falls, Wisconsin, always I think helps in terms of keeps them grounded, and they always stay very. They've always been very close to the consumer.
Lloyd, got a quick question for you. I kind of had a theory about a year ago about the malls and all the REITs and, you know, tied to it and, you know, the fact that maybe they're going to be having some big holes in there to fill with what's going on in the retail. I mean, they, you know, I look at like Taubman, that's kind of held up kind of well. Kind of my theory hasn't really, you know, bared out. I mean, if they, you know, if everyone's truly going online, then, you know, what's the future for some of these big REITs and these big mall companies?
You know, that's a big question that hasn't been answered yet. And I think the malls have done a great job at, you know, sort of working with what they have and trying to refurbish some space and re-merchandise their assortments like a store would do. And I think that, to be honest with you, you know, bricks and mortar are never going to go away. The experience may change and the investments the retailers need to make and mall owners as well. Need to make in their properties and in their spaces is different now, and they have to blend the technology and again make it a boundaryless experience so that there's more of an online experience brought into the store and make it mobile friendly and have some technology that helps the customers get in and out maybe quicker. But I think that shopping is a social event. I think it'll always be a social event, and I think the malls recognize that. The malls are actually, you know, if you look GGP. General Growth just invested in Aeropostale, okay, to keep 500 stores open. So I think you're going to see more and more of those partnerships from malls taking stakes in some of these things. I also think that malls are being smarter and taking on some more experiential types of retailers as opposed to just selling product. They're selling experiences. And so I think the malls have done a great job at that, and I think that there's going to be more of that to come. You know, Macy's is unloading some of their stores and to Brookfield, and there's more unlocking the value for the shareholders in some of these places, like Hudson Bay Company did very well, very successfully. So I think that the malls are really, as opposed to being more of a passive vehicle now, they've had to become much more active in their approach to remerchandising and redeveloping their properties, which I think is a good thing because I think it leads to more creativity. It helps, you know, it used to be an adversarial relationship between the tenant and the landlord, and now it's becoming much more of a partnership. And I think with that, everybody will see the fruits of that relationship improving.
We've been on the line with Lloyd Perlmutter, retail industry executive and advisor, talking retail ahead of the big holiday season. Thanks, Lloyd. We'll talk to you again soon.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks. Have a great day.
All right. S&P futures still down 8.5 points here, bouncing around 51.75. Keeping an eye on mid-range on the day. That comes right in at the 21.60 level. Dennis, do we got you back?
I'm here. What do you want to jump into? You want to jump into some of these earnings reports?
Let's do a few earnings. I want to talk Alibaba. Let's go. Let's finish up the earnings reports.
Let's go to Nordstrom, JWN here. Big report here. Stock is trading up 4.5% here this morning. It was up more, though, so it's come off of the highs here. It's had a big bounce already. I mean, it went from 50 to 58. You know, Kohl's reported pretty good numbers. Macy's reported pretty good numbers. JWN pounced, following their lead, and if you were following that lead, you did well because it actually got up over $60 here last night. Spencer, what are the JWN numbers?
Oh, I just gave him, Dennis. Where were you?
Oh, you already did JWN.
Q3 EPS.
I'm trading. I was trading. Yeah. Don't have to give him that.
All right. Well, yeah, right. I gave him.
All right. Pre-market high, 60.93. We've come back just holding on to the $58 level. That's minor support. In order to fill the gap from yesterday, 57.33.
Also looking here, did we cover JCPenney? You talked JCPenney this morning?
Yeah, but we need to do technicals.
Yeah,
give us some technicals. We got to jump in because it's down 7.5%. Give us the technicals on JCP.
Oh, straight. Wow, you hit 932. You hit 775, just holding above the $8 level. Let's see if the shorts want to bring it in at 8 or around 8. You have a double bottom from Tuesday and Wednesday, 792 and 797.
We are just getting hit here a little bit on 8:30. I'm seeing the imbalances just came out, and I think that's why you're seeing individual stocks really move here. There's big sell imbalances in the financials here right now. Citigroup, yeah. 207,000 to sell. Bank of America, 974,000 to sell. Morgan Stanley, 204,000 to sell. Wells Fargo, 261,000 to sell. Goldman Sachs, 72,000 to sell. Again, some institutional profit taking. I don't know how excited I'm getting. If I'm sure, I think these things may open weaker here, but again, there's so many people caught underwater in these things. I don't think they're just going to like give half of it back, because there's a lot of people that are scrambling around looking for cover, probably holding on to some of these shorts that have just been running in their face for 2 days here. So you're getting a pullback here, a little healthy pullback in the moves here, but I don't know if I'm out here to declare that this bull run in the financials is over.
Launcher steak dinner, 1963 is what you get in Bank America, and I get 1763.
No, because it's too close. Oh man, you got me thinking though. Like, I'm just on the side of the trade here right now. I don't know. It's such a funny market.
Okay,
here right
we'll
now.
Let it go. How about
I can't.
How about a beer? We'll scale it down.
No, I'm not even betting with you right
okay.
now.
Okay,
so I'm too busy. Too busy trading here right now. I can't
even
bet on
me.
Side. Because then I get worried. You know what it is? I care about that beer more than I care about the money in the trade. So I can't do that just because I want to beat you. So
okay.
I need to focus on the trading right now. I got to stay away from the side bets here right now. So let's just, you know, look here at some of those financials. Like Wells Fargo. Let's put this one in perspective here. Here was the stock back in September before there was any fake account debacle. Stock was trading at around $50. Now, the stock is 51.63. So here we are in 3 days. It gets all of its losses back plus more. Everybody completely forgetting that this company had all those fake accounts going on. The fake account scandal, just forget about it. It doesn't even matter anymore because we love banks. And we'll buy every bank no matter what. And you can see Wells Fargo here is just, you know, recipient of just buying every bank.
Man.
Got to 51.93 yesterday. That is insane. But you know what? Insane moves can continue for a long time.
Well, let's see here. Based on the moves, I think they are pricing in what interest rates are going like to 3% or something like that.
That's what they looks
that's
like.
That's what it looks like.
That
yeah.
interest rates are going to go up so high, the way they've been hitting everything. So, you know, just talking like they're hitting. Yeah, well, they're hitting so many different, you know, interest rates. Not like we said the Procter and Gamble's, but you know, even looking at your utilities and stock, they've been hitting stuff like interest rates are going to start flying high. And I don't think that's the case. But, you know, short term here, I can't blame you if you're locking in some profits in a stock like Wells Fargo. I don't know. This thing is crazy enough. It could go 53, 54 bucks. Who knows where it could go? But when the dust settles here, 2 or 3 months from later, I think Wells Fargo is going to give back some of these gains.
All right. We got S&P's down 9.5. Some of the stocks did get hit on the imbalance. Need the good technical setups, though. I mean, you can't declare the move over, especially with this kind of momentum in the financials. You know, once again, if you're sitting on some big profits in the stock, I mean, there might be some juicy call premium, maybe buy, you know, sell part of your position, but you know, buy some puts if you're worried. Or, you know, the thing I said yesterday was, you know, move your stop up, get taken out on weakness. Maybe you don't get the whole move, but if you've been moving your stop up, you know, every buck here.
Great point.
Yeah, 46, then you move it to 47, then you move it to 48, you know. You just, you know, trail that stop. All right, that is 1 minute.
Trailing stops, there you go. That's a strategy that typically, you know, doesn't work that well because of so much mean reversion. I'll tell you, if you're on the right side of the trade and you're in it early, trailing those stops has been a moneymaker for you. Like, look at this 2-day move in Wells Fargo. I don't know if you'd have got stopped out. You know, maybe from the 51 to the 50 when it pulled back there, but holy cow, from 45 to 52, not a lot of pullbacks there. I'll tell you right now on RGR, if you were short that thing and you were using trailing stops, there's very little chance you're probably getting stopped out on that thing, especially yesterday because it was just straight down. So, you know, great point here, Joel. You know, that strategy, it's called strategy rotation is what it is. In a lot of markets, in an oscillating market, in a mean reverting market, trailing stops does not work. You're going to get stopped out of everything. But in a trendy market, or in a market that's just violently trending like this one in stiff individual stocks, trailing your stops is just a fantastic strategy for this market here. So good point, Joel, of something I didn't even consider there. But, you know, go to your strategy. This is why, you know, over the years, and this is, you know, I've been trading 17 years, so I have a lot of strategies in my basket of, you know, tools for trading there. You know, this is stuff you've learned over the years. But, you know, sometimes something you maybe threw away 3, 4, 5 years ago because it wasn't working might work in this new trading environment. So it's all about adjusting your strategies to the environment that we're in. Right now we are in a trending, you know, market in individual stocks where they're going one direction relentlessly and don't want to come back down. It will change. I'll tell you right now, this will change. These financials aren't going to go up forever. When they start going down, they're going to start going down hard. So you'll see, you know, Wells Fargo all of a sudden lose 3 points in a day, and you'll be like, what happened? I don't know if it's going to happen at 55. I don't know if that's going to happen at 58. I don't know if it's going to happen today at 51. But I'll tell you, when the trend starts going the other direction, it's going to be pesky the other way as well as people roll over trying to get out of these positions, because right now it's maybe getting a little bit crowded to the long side there. So trailing your stops, if you're able to identify the turn, and I don't know when that's going to happen, but if you can pick it up and trail those stops, it might work out well for you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to bring in Andrew Zatlin. He's the editor of Moneyball Economics, and we're going to be talking about vices and the impact on the market and new president in. Can't wait to talk to Andrew. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, Forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.
Welcome back, traders and investors, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep, brought to you by Benzinga Pro. I'm your co-host, Joel Elkanen, along with Dennis Dick and Spencer Israel, and we have Andrew Zatlin on the line. He is the editor of Moneyball Economics, talking about vices. How you doing today, Andrew?
Let's talk vices. It's Friday, man. Let's get ready.
Yeah, for the weekend. I mean, we could do a variety of them, but man, first of all, I just got to get your, you know, your perspective, you know, on the market, and what do you think are going to be the new vices under the new administration?
Oh my God, man! You just poked the elephant in the room. Trump, the new administration. You know, everyone's going crazy this week, and I think it's. I just got back from a road trip in New York, talking to a bunch of institutional investors, and you know, they were looking forward to a calm, quiet Thanksgiving, drifting into the end of the fiscal year and into bonus season and all that good stuff. Nobody expected the scenario of a sweep. Everyone thought there'd be kind of gridlock. You know, I, for example, thought Trump would take it, and I thought that Congress would be split, and so you'd have daggers at everybody's throat. You wouldn't get anywhere. And even if Hillary took it, same kind of scenario. But all of a sudden, this is a throwback to when Obama got elected, where you have control. You have absolute control, and so anything you want to do can get done, and nobody was positioned for that. So this week is really, my interpretation at least, is that everyone's repositioning for that, and you know, give it a week or so, and then the markets will calm down. Maybe you sell into the strength. There's a lot of overbuying and overselling right now as people try to figure this out, you know, because he really can drive things through. And off on the side, independent, is marijuana. And pots, that's it. The tipping point was hit with California. It's a done deal. The only other state that you really have to talk about is Texas. And then you're going to have the green economy. And I've actually been kind of participating in the green economy indirectly, not directly, of course, because that would have been illegal in California, but indirectly by talking a lot to producers, sellers, and so on, and spotting where the money's going to get made and you know, where it isn't going to get made. But these are good times for marijuana. And I forgot what company is out there that sells a lot of botanical stuff. I'd have to look them up in a minute, but you know, they're coming out with hydroponics and other specialized supplies for pot. And it's just, you know, you're going to see corporate America jump into this really fast. You'll see companies like Altria. I mean, you're not going to have independent farmers, you know, planting an acre of pot. You're going to have Altria come in and own from seed to store the way they do with tobacco and so on. Philip Morris.
So, Andrew, let's talk Altria for a second here, because I've had a lot of traders ask me questions. What is wrong with tobacco stocks here right now? And you can see just since Trump got in, Altria has went from 66 down to 61 bucks. I mean, it's a yield play, and they've been hitting these kind of stocks. That's, you know, my answer to it. I mean, Philip Morris, PM, has went from 98 bucks down to 90. These are big moves for usually stocks that don't trade in these kind of, you know, huge moves. How are you trading, you know, stocks like this in this type of environment?
I mean, a stock like this, aren't you really buying the yield, the dividend, when you're talking about these companies? And so, you know, that's where the question is, what's going to happen with rates? And so people look at these stocks. I don't think it's so much actually, let me take that back. There is a partial element of fundamentals here outside of what are the dividend-producing stocks worth getting into with rates going up and all that. And off on the side, you know, you have California doing things like, we're going to tax tobacco. Higher, and that's never good for tobacco sales. I'm not saying that California is driving the stock price moves, but I think overall this was just a rate. Notice that they're going down at the same time bank stocks are going up.
Yeah,
that's the relationship. It's a total play on the yield, and it gets back to expectations about rate hikes, and the market kind of forcing a rate hike.
What are your expectations on rate hike here? Like, obviously, I think December, it looks like, you know, we're probably going to go up. At least the market thinks we're going to go up here. But do you see interest rates really climbing substantially here? Because when you really analyze, and we've talked about this on the show a lot of times, I mean, $18 trillion in debt or whatever it is now. You know, how can they really, you know, everybody's living on debt here. How can they really, you know, come in here and really jack interest rates a lot? I can't see how that could happen. Can you?
Okay, so for the benefit of your listeners, they need to understand where I come from. I'm a bottom-up guy. I'm not looking at the market from some remote ivory tower and going, this is what I think.
Okay.
I'll tell you what I know. And let's go back to what they want to do, what they can do, and what they might have to do. So let's start with the real-world economics type of situation. Fuel. Okay, now remember, gas is higher than it was earlier in the year, and gas is higher than it was pretty much last year. Now it's bouncing around between 45 and 50, but that's, you know, that's off on the side. In reality, gas is not going down anytime soon. It's going to be going up, probably bumping 50 again. But even if it doesn't, the reality is gas prices are passed along in this economy through trucking. And this is really key. You hear things like, oh, the Fed's going to look at the core inflation CPI, and that strips out energy. And that's right. It strips out gas spending on fuel. But that's not the way our economy functions. 70% of everything in this country is shipped by a truck. And truck firms are allowed to add a surcharge for fuel. And that bounces around. It follows fuel prices. When we get to the first quarter next year, gas prices on a year-over-year basis will be up not quite 4% if they're trading around 48, 49 bucks. So that's 4%. Inflation implicit year over year, no matter what, just because of the comps to last year. So no matter what, when we come into next year, there's going to be a spike in inflation just because gas prices went up, truck companies passed those costs along. It's not going to be a jump of inflation of 4%, but everything that gets shipped by a truck will cost 4% more. And then you look at our broader economy and you ask, okay, well, you know, what's the goods shipping and all that? Doesn't matter. You're going to see a spike in inflation. And now the question is, what's the Fed going to do when they see that? Oh, and by the way, healthcare. Oh, my God, that is off the charts inflationary right now. I am an unfortunate victim of Obamacare. My insurance went up 20% next year. And that's after taxes. I'm paying $5,000 more. Take that, factor it across. It's guns and butter. That means I'm spending $5,000 less on productive things. So inflation is going to spike. Meanwhile, the market is already going to assume that inflation is going up. So they're already going to look at pushing up yields. And that's what's happening, even though, you know, the past few days are sort of off on the side. It's more of a Brexit thing, a panic, you know, kind of repositioning thing. But bottom line, you're going to start to see in the macroeconomic data that supposedly fuels the Fed, you're going to see inflation move up. Now, we've been hearing the Fed jawbone interest rates for, you know, going up for over a year, and then they back off. Go on. They don't really have to do anything to achieve an economic slowdown, which is what raising a rate is supposed to counter inflation. Well, the reality is raise the rates, it's not going to touch inflation. It's not going to touch Obamacare. It's not going to touch rents. It's not going to touch minimum wage hikes that are driving inflation. Nothing the Fed does from an economic standpoint is going to counter the inflation. But that's not why they've been jawboning. It's the fact that at some point rates have to go up. But it's that question of at what point do rates go up? And from an economic fundamental standpoint, unfortunately, things are going to start to line up and say, geez, it looks like raising rates is necessary. Is the world going to fall apart if they raise it up 15 basis points, 25 basis points? No. It's not the end of the world. It'll shift a few things, obviously, in the bond markets. But from a day-to-day standpoint, from you and I spending our money standpoint, you know, we'll yawn. It'll have some effect. It'll have some drag, but nothing that's going to crash and burn. I mean, corporate share buybacks and debt-funded corporate misbehavior, a quarter point isn't going to really change that. The core problem here, I think, and the reluctance to raise rates has to do with the fact that we've got, what, $20-something trillion in the treasuries that we pay on. You start charging a 0.25% extra on, you know, having to pay back on $20 trillion, that's real money. How does the government balance that? And so that's where I see the bigger problems is the Fed has kind of boxed itself in. But there's really no choice. They've got to raise rates at some time. I just, you know, if they do it in December, you know, Merry Christmas. Thank you, Janet. A little coal in my stocking. But I think they've done a great job of getting a price, a rate hike priced in. So it won't be a shock and a surprise.
All right, give
and
us
I think
one.
The market's already saying, let's do it.
Give us one sec, you know, one or two sectors that you think are going to benefit here in the next, you know, 3-4 years from this administration, and maybe one or two to avoid.
Oh, it's going to be huge. Huge. No, I'm trying to do my Donald Trump imitation. I failed. look, one of the things that I do, and I'm a back to basics guy, is I track hiring. I look at each company, and I do a big data play here, and I scrape a lot of information. And I have a good way to track whether a company's hiring more or hiring less. And coming out of the corporate world the way I do, that is the be-all and the end-all of whether a company's expecting their business activity to pick up or slow down. And very straightforward. It's very one-to-one. And there's one sector that has been on a tear with hiring. You know, they are just ramping up their hiring, and they have been for a year, and that's the military-industrial complex. And I saw that last year, and I started poking at it and raising my hand and saying, look, these companies, you know, Northrop Grumman, Lockheed, they're, you know, what's going on here? Because we know the U.S. defense budget is flat. And I don't know what a Trump administration would do with the defense budget. And I don't think that's material. I think instead what we've got are two major arms races going on. Go back in time a little bit. It wasn't too long ago, a couple months ago, Obama goes to Vietnam. And what does he do? He sells $10 billion of military equipment and arms to Vietnam. $10 billion is a nice chunk of change. But he can't make that sale unless he went back to the Northrop Grumman and Lockheed of the world and said, hey, I'm going to Vietnam. You guys want to come with me? And maybe can you step up to some big arms sales, right? This stuff gets negotiated well in advance. And so that's why I think the military complex is the place to go, because that was they were tipped off that, you know, there's a big business coming down the line to start hiring and ramping up and get ready to produce weapons for the Middle East because of what's going on with Iran. I mean, how many billions are we selling now in new orders to Saudi Arabia? And because of China. China's really scaring Japan, Korea, even the Philippines. So what are they going to do? Give me weapons. Give me some arms. So that's the one sector that, to me, actually, I think is on a growth direction. I also think the oil complex is oversold right now. I don't know when you get into them, but I think they've bottomed. And, you know, equipment falls apart. And so I would think about getting into some of the equipment makers, not the ones that are going that do expansion, but the ones that, so, you know, getting into rigs and things like that. You know, turn them on, turn them off. You know, what's the price of oil? I don't think you have a meaningful price yet where you're going to have a surge in a lot of oil pumping, but you've got maintenance. You've got to take care of the equipment. So I would imagine that there's some subset of that sector that would be interesting.
We've been on the line with Andrew Zatlin. He's the editor of Moneyball Economics. I can't believe we haven't had you on since December, Andrew. You are fantastic. Thank you, and we're going to be bringing you back on again soon.
Thanks, guys. Hey, everyone, happy investing, and I guess early Thanksgiving.
Okay. All right. 8:50 here on the desk, and I talked about having a special guest come on, and that special guest, kid, is he mic'd in here? Our special guest is Brad Fry. Now, you guys are asking who Brad Fry is. Brad Fye is from England, and he happened to sign up for our seminar this weekend, which we rescheduled into early next year. Brad, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Joel. Good to be here.
And first of all, how did you find out about the show?
So I listened to an interview with Dennis on Chat with Traders, and he was talking about his pre-market, looking at the imbalances and trading the open, and I thought, well, the market opens for me around lunchtime, which means I can have a nice leisurely morning and trade for a couple of hours in the afternoon and pack up by 4:30, so I thought that sounded like a good thing, so I picked up the show to find out what you guys did, and I've been listening every day since.
Okay, and you said, now let's just talk about your trading investing day. Markets open up earlier, so what time does the show come on for you?
1 o'clock normally, but from in between the clock changes when it catches me out and comes on an hour early. So,
and what did you take? A couple things that you've learned from the show that help you with your investing trading styles. There are a couple particular things, a couple tips that you've picked up along the line.
I think the main thing is a lot of the retail investing education out there. It's all, you know, talking about indicators and things which really don't make that much difference. The thing that I've learned from the show, from listening to you guys who actually been in the markets for many years, is the real market structure and order flow and understanding the psychology of traders. So you were explaining the other day, Joel, about I think it was Facebook had come down, and you were saying that, you know, the stop's going to be coming down on this, so the levels that were there before are now moving down. And it's like, you know, understanding it from that perspective, where somebody who is never worked on the trading floor, never really been surrounded by traders day to day, you just wouldn't think like that. You're looking at the technicals and you're looking at it like, you know, you're taught to by the books. But understanding that psychology has given me a very different perspective on the market, and I think that's going to be really valuable moving forward.
Brad, so tell us a little bit about your trading style here. You're over in the UK there, but you're trading the US markets. Do you trade the UK markets as well, or are you sticking, you know, and you're trading the US markets?
So I do some investing in the UK markets, because most of my investment funds are in an ISA, which is, I think you guys have like an IRA or something over here, which is the same thing. So I'm limited to what I can buy and sell in there. So a lot of those I buy the US equities. It's also quite a good currency hedge. For the trading, I kind of say that I'm paper trading, but I'm trading with really small amounts. I don't really think paper trading teaches you anything. So I trade with small amounts of money, so that if I lose...
You've been listening to the show, because that's what I say all the time. I always say it's better to trade with a little small amount of money, get the feel for it. And paper trading, like, I never paper traded. I never did through my, you know, even in the beginning of my career. I mean, maybe it's something to do, but I love that you're using small amounts of money, because it really gets you into it when you actually have real money in the game.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I've put a couple of trades on in my paper trade account, and then I've come back to a couple of months later and I've forgotten they were even there. I mean, there's no way I would have done that, even if it was, you know, a penny a point with real money. So it's, you know, it makes a huge difference for the psychology, because you put a couple of trades on and all of the screens suddenly light up blue, which is good on the platform I'm using, and you just can't think straight anymore. And it's like, you're never going to get that experience with paper trading. So it's that will hopefully put me in good stead for actually being able to do some proper trades once I decide to put some good size on.
Let's talk.
So what stocks?
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, we're both gonna ask the same question. I think Joel and me read each other. What stocks do you like trading there, Brad?
I haven't really picked a favorite at the moment. I've dotted around various different things. I look at what's moving on the day. I don't like things that are too volatile. I think I'm probably naturally short biased, which is not really a great disposition in the current market, because everything just seems to be going up whether you like it or not. So I just kind of move around and see what's moving on the day, and try and pick out some good levels and listen to what you guys are looking at. And if I see a setup that I like, and I see that that there's volume and it looks like there's people who are stuck or want to take some profit, and I can see that there's a good logical reason for the price to move at a certain point, then I'll jump in and try and make some money.
What kind of technicals do you follow?
I just look at the tape. I kind of think that's the only thing that is real. When you're looking at the intraday trades, so I follow the tape. I look at volume. I look at volume profiles, and I just see where most of the action is, where the money's moving, because that, you know, really that's all that counts at the end of the day.
And let's just talk a little bit Brexit here. We don't need to know how you voted on it, but just, you know, the reaction in the marketplace, the reaction there on the ground floor, new administration over there. Give us your take on that and what you think the future implications are going to be for England and the impact on the European Union and maybe something on the United States. I know that's a really tough question.
That's a big question. Yeah. That's way above my pay grade. But okay. So my first ever trade was actually Brexit night. So, you know, it was quite an exciting night. I decided to jump straight in and trade some currency options on Brexit night. And I lost money on the options, but I made some money on the hedge. So I got something right and something wrong, but it worked out okay at the end of the day. I don't think it's a good thing for the market. The rally caught me completely off guard, as it has done with the Trump as well. I think I'm now going to be, for the rest of my trading career, expecting any massive event that is supposed to be a sell-off is now going to turn into a bull run. But we'll see what happens there. I don't think it's going to be good for the UK economy moving forward. I don't think it's good news for the EU with Trump getting in. The kind of rebalancing of power from the old rich white guys to everybody else looks like it's taking hold worldwide, and I can see that having much broader implications for the EU and the rest of the market. So maybe my short bias will come into its own in the future.
All right, we're going to wrap things up. We've had Brad Fry on. He is an investor from England here, spending the day at Benzinga. Dennis, we got 3 minutes to go. How are those selling balances doing?
They got bigger, so the financials are really taking a hit here this morning, although they've come back a little bit from the lows. 855,000 to sell Bank of America, Citigroup 210,000 to sell, Morgan Stanley 238,000 to sell, Wells still 201,000 to sell, Merck 101,000 to sell. You know, the pharmaceuticals have kind of been moving along with the financials here. Both those sectors have been very, very strong the last 2 days, and it looks like some profit taking here this morning. And then in the opposite direction are the stocks that have been beat up. If you look at the tobacco this morning, Philip Morris, Moe, RAI, we were just talking about them, are all up substantially here in the pre-market. You're seeing stocks like Coke bounce back here this morning. You're seeing Procter & Gamble here in the green. So some of the defensive yield plays are a little bit stronger here this morning. So it's kind of a little bit of maybe, rotating away from where we've been going the last 2 days. But I'm not sure if this is just a blip and then that pesky, you know, overall trend is going to continue, or, you know, if this is the start of a new trend. But it's something to note here, because the first day coming in and actually seeing some weakness in the financials and the drugs.
All right, 8:58. What a show today. I'd like to thank our guests for coming on. Andrew Zatlin, editor of Moneyball Economics. Andrew, we want you in the chat every day now. And also our other guest, Lloyd Perlmutter. He's a retail industry executive and advisor. This is going to wrap up the show for this wild and crazy week. Spencer, give us a little preview for next week.
Well, we got some good guests on in the pipeline for next week. Mike Bailey, director of research at FBB Capital Partners. He is a biotech expert. We're also going to be chatting with Ron Benvenue, our activist investor friend, and Jamie Wise. He created the Buzz Social Media Index. Wally Olapede, a trading educator. So we got a pretty good slate for you next week, and we're excited to get right to it. But we'll let you go for the rest of the day and for the weekend. Crazy show, jam-packed show. Hope everybody had a good week and has a good Friday and a good weekend. And we will be back with you folks on Monday.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, Forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.